Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Exploring Ekphrasis with Captain B2, Simwa, and my trusty sidekick, Gray Eyes Smith. Gray Eyes, are you out there?
I am. Hello, Bobby.
Mine too. And I thought, considering the artwork, I was looking for something that was appropriate. I hope our audience is enjoying the selections. I've been trying to come up with something a little bit different for each show, something that maybe is appropriate to the artwork. And most of it actually in the last few weeks has been vintage. But since this is one of our Too Much of a Good Thing contests, and the next contest is going to be more Michael Cheval, although I think people know Michael Cheval overload, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. I actually have that was the Immortal Gracie Slick, and nobody can belt that song like she can. However, I have found a version where Pink is singing it, and she does a tremendous job with it. She got the same power in her voice. And so for next show, the intro is going to be White Rabbit sung by Pink. And so that ought to be a refreshing difference, but still a powerful rendition of a really immortal song. And really, this song is not that long. You know, it's only less than 3 minutes. But I think anyone who grew up with it, has it embedded in their soul. So, do you remember that song growing up? Oh yeah, I love that song. Yeah. How you been?
I've been good, thanks.
Yeah, I apologize ahead of time to our audience. I'm probably not going to be as loquacious as I normally am. I've been a little under the weather, and it's just It almost feels like, you know, people who have malaria will have flashbacks. I remember my dad, he caught malaria in the Pacific during the war, and occasionally he'd have flashbacks and get the chills and be miserable with a headache for about a day and a half. Well, I think COVID has the same properties, even though it's not caused by any kind of protozoa. I've just been feeling like I'm having COVID flashbacks this week. I'm just chills and general malaise and lethargy. So I'm hoping I snap out of it because it really sucks. So anyway, I'm not going to be all bouncy and ebullient tonight. So I'm going to count on you for that. So you get to bounce off the walls tonight.
Right.
So, okay. Well, we have no carryovers again. Unbelievably, we're doing good. Tonight's show is I'm scrolling, and fingers have forgotten my word. The Eternal Absurdity of Michael Cheval, and it's part one. And it's a part one because he's got several portfolios on his website, and this portfolio has it's his Eternity of Absurdity collection. And so what I did, I split it in half. And I thought I'd give everybody the whole collection because it's certainly his artwork. I don't know about anyone else, but I don't get tired of it. It's just so much wonderful detail in it. Although we had back when the world was new and Dan DeShino was my co-pilot, one of our first shows, back in like March or April of last year, was Michael Cheval. But I promised myself I'd come back to him because his artwork is just too good to ignore. And obviously some of the other LNP hosts feel the same way because I got a note from Pam this morning mentioning that if we didn't have enough material from our contest, that she and someone else had another contest with Michael Cheval. So she gave me a lead on some more material. So we'll see how it goes. And I actually tacked an old piece of mine on there that was written based on a piece of artwork of Michael Cheval. So that's on the end of our board. So anyway, enough of my babbling. No one's dialing in to hear Breeden monopolize the 2 hours. Let's get some poetry rolling here. So we've got, let me close this. There we go. That's better. It's teeter. Okay. Oh, hey, we have 11 pieces now. That's encouraging. Yeah. And so we have 11 pieces, and we're starting with Jenny the Deep. And if you post that, my friend, I will kick off the reading. Outstanding. And I see we have a couple of folks hanging out with us on the board. How lovely. Welcome.
Yes.
Welcome, everyone. Yes. And please, when you're listening, please feel free to pen your thoughts on the board because we do share them with the rest of the audience. So, okay, here we go. We have I opened it? There we go. Open it. There we go. I've got too many links. There we go. Mad Hatter. Okay, we have Mad Hatter of a World by Jenny the Deep. Welcome to my tea party of the century. Pull up a seat and listen to absurd stories. Effervescently floating, sipping on psychedelic teas, this gathering will go down in history. Hallucinating like Alice in Wonderland, but this trip is for the grandest of grands. Tea is spilling over unsteady hands. Watch as the intoxicated try to stand. A hoot and a riot like the Mad Hatter. Breaking dishes, we play pitcher and batter. No need to clean. It just makes our lives sadder. All want to hear our jokes that fill us with laughter. If you can't make us laugh our heads off, then off with yours, like the queen says in a huff. Life is but a game, not meant to be so serious. Drink with me, and you'll see. It can be absurdly hilarious. End of poem.
Great read. And that was a fantastic write by Jenny Deep. You know, it captures the essence of Alice in the Wonderland quite beautifully. And I really liked A Hoot and a Riot, The Mad Hatter, Breaking Dishes, We Play Pitcher and Batter. No need to clean, it just makes our lives sadder. All want to hear our jokes that fill us with laughter. And then, of course, the penultimate stanza. If you can't make us laugh our heads off, then off with yours, like the Queen says in a huff. Life is but a game, not meant to be so serious. Drink with me, and you'll see it can be absurdly hilarious. You know, I have consumed mushroom tea, and yeah, what a trip it was. You know, back in my 20s, when I first moved to British Columbia, that was part of the experience, was to do mushrooms. And a lot of people went up on the mountain when they did them, but I wasn't quite as adventurous as all that. But yeah, it was definitely an experience for sure. Hello, Bobby?
Oops. I was having a gulp of coffee, and I didn't want to make noise in the background. I've never experimented deliberately with hallucinogens. I a couple of years ago, accidentally ingested some cannabis laced fudge, and just an ever so tiny amount. I mean, you know, it was like maybe the size of a dime. And in a matter of hours, I was just totally incapacitated. They had to call 911 because I thought I was going to die. It was just the worst experience I think I've ever had. And they said, "What?" People said, "Did you tell them?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I found out it was cannabis in it." So I told the emergency personnel that they've got to know what they're dealing with. And it finally came out of it. And but boy, oh boy, I just I was glad I'd never fooled with it before, and now I'm certain I'm never going to fool with it again. My body just doesn't like it. I've got one of those bodies that anything you introduce chemically, my body takes it very seriously. So
yeah,
I mean, even out of histamines. I mean, worst experiences I ever had was taking Sudafed for a sinus problem. I used to fix radios when I was in the Marine Corps, and the first time I had problems, and I went to sick bay, and they prescribed Sudafed, and I started taking it. And my supervisor, staff sergeant, comes around, and he picks my head up out of the radio because I'd gone face down in my radio. And he goes, "What are you on?" I said, "Sudafed." He said, "Go home." It makes for some very odd looking bruises. Anyway, but yeah, so
yeah.
That's I like this write also. She's had a lot of fun with the prompt and with the subject matter. It's welcome to my tea party of the century. Pull up a seat and listen to absurd stories effervescently float, sipping on psychedelic teas. This gathering will go down in history. She's got a very subtle rhyming pattern in there. It's very short, only about four stanzas, but you've got some good storytelling here. A hoot and a riot, like the Mad Hatter. And it's I also enjoy this particular story. I mean, but you can. It seems like it's not as well known as it used to be, because I make references to this occasionally. I will say things like off with their heads, and everyone looks at me like I'm quite mad. my favorite one is when you're in a meeting and people are kind of shuffling around and trying to get their place. I start yelling, "Clean cup, move down, clean cup, move down." You know, and nobody understands that.
Yeah,
clean up, move down. Yeah, yeah. You know, interestingly enough, the reference to the Mad Hatter is actually quite legitimate, because in medieval Europe, mercury was used in manufacturing. It was hat makers commonly cured felt using a form of mercury called mercurius nitrate. And as the hat makers inhaled mercury vapors over time, many of them had neurological symptoms of mercury poisoning. And by the 1830s, mad as a hatter was a common saying. And that's where it comes from.
Yeah, no, I knew that. I remember that, actually.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I wanted to share that with the folks who, you know, why he made that reference to the Mad Hatter. But what did you think of that ride?
I thought it was good. You know, I liked the flow of it. It had excellent storyline to it, and you read it quite well. The kind poet in the group says, the structure and imagery in this poem allowed me to imagine the Hatter at his table. I also like the rhyme scheme, too. Clever word. Thank you for sharing that, kind poet.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the comment, kind poet. Hang with us. We want to hear more from you. Okay, so the next one. Oh, it's Ben Hart time. You up to this? You sure?
Yeah, you bet.
You can do this? Take a deep breath. Now square your shoulders.
Yeah.
Dive in. Go for it.
It will be him. One. Blued. Hands blued like lovesome river in the cold snap of your absence. Always a matador mourns what he let slip. In that sense, I'm no different. And if stars shun in orbit, always, perhaps it would rain wedding rings. But instead, aureate masks and shroud faces of ember, yet the eyes of time still note my shortcomings and weigh them within the twilight as I let another day, another love pass me by. 2. Death's flagship, Valkyrie. And from the nether tides, through gray veils danced, and out of the east sun's rising, sails the fleet of death, bearing gifts from divine havens far across the light of time to make good on her promise that she'd settle her debts. Bring spring where there was winter. Bring good luck to where it left. Only then, from good earth's tender, shall she sail back into west sun's set. 3. The moment. I couldn't number the days since the griddling of the leaves, the gilding of the leaves in honor of autumn's envy, made a monument of that place and time, that moment among the many throughout life, like a sky lantern drifting through the past. Sometimes the moment lasts for undoing bluffing. You stumbled in, humming Eden's rock and roll, lips swimming through lavender smoke, and you flashed me a smile that told me I was born for you, that this is love and you're its flood, that my body was your garden, and the heart I had grown there to you was more than just flotsam, and I thank you for that. Much to your amusement, and I knew right then I'd never be alone again, because an eternity with you, that seems like a kind coming undone. 5. Ponder. My friends don't like you because you made me suffer for your love, and now I begin to fear that's exactly what guided me into the fall. 6. Call it love. He touches me like he does the pieces on a chessboard, and dares call it love. He kisses my neck like he does the cigarette, stifling his breath, and dares call it sex. He teases my lips like he does the audience, outliving the applause, and dares to call it a performance. He bleats my dreams like he does my eyes gleaning if I let him, and dares call it a victory. But the real victor, the only one who always wins, for now, remains defeat, though I'm hoping one day it will be me. I've got a funny feeling it will be him. 7. Heart. For an instrument of love, for a brittle thing, the heart is a bold tool to tear itself apart for the impossible, for the music, for the old echoing into new, like bruises, like youth. And my heart, it's endured some, but nothing like you. Nothing like you. End poem.
Great. Well done. Good storytelling. And very, very interesting. The line of thought he's got in this. He did something very subtle in the center that I don't think he's ever done before. He switches genders. He does it so adroitly that unless you're really focused in on the use of the pronouns, you can't tell that he's shifted. But it makes me wonder it when I go back to and I'm going to have to reread it. Does he start? Thinking and referring in the female as he gets down about the center? He starts. Where I'm looking for it here. My friends don't like you because you make me suffer for your love. He touches me in six. Call it love. He touches me like he does the pieces on a chessboard and dares call it love. What a great opening. He kisses my neck and does the cigarette stifling his breath and dares call it sex. He teases my lips like he does the audience outliving the applause and dares call it a performance. This passage I find absolutely fascinating in the way that he's described the relationship and the actions and how the individual that he's speaking of really thinks they're rendering their utmost and really they're just offering a minimal lip service. He fleets my dreams like he does my eyes gleaning if I let him and dares call it a victory. But the real victor, the only one who always wins for now, remains defeat. The one day I'm hoping it will be me. I've got a funny feeling it will be him. And it's interesting because right in the center there, he goes masculine on the other individual. But he's speaking on four. He says, you stumbled in humming Eden's rock and roll, lips swimming through lavender smoke. And he's speaking directly to the person. Excuse me again. This is COVID's gift that keeps on giving, this damn cough I have. It's interesting. This is a piece that I'm really going to have to go back over very carefully and follow the thought process because there's a very complex, a very dense, very layered storyline in this. And it merits a real excuse me examination and a discussion. I'm losing my voice too. That's great. but the last part of it, the heart is a bold fool to tear itself apart for the impossible. That line right that passage right there, so profound. For the music, the old echoing into the new, like bruises, like youth, and my heart, it's endured some, but nothing like you, nothing like you. This has got to be, I think, one of his finer pieces, very cerebral. What did you think of it?
Yeah, you know, it definitely has the Ben Hart flair to it with its depth and introspection woven throughout the right. I couldn't number the days since the gilding of the leaves in honor of autumn's envy made a monument of that place and time, that moment,
yeah,
among the many throughout life, like a sky lantern drifting through the past. I mean, like a sky lantern drifting through the past is just amazing imagery, if you ask me. And mm-hmm. It's very thought-provoking, for sure. And then I also liked, you stumbled in humming Eden's rock and roll, lips swimming through the lavender smoke, and you flashed me a smile that told me I was born for you, that this is love and you're its flood, that my body was your garden and the heart I had grown here, there, to you was more than just floating. And thank you for that. So, yeah, beautifully expressed and fabulous to read it.
I'm glad you cited that that passage, because I also was drawn to it. I like his now I'm looking for it, and now I've lost it. There we go. I couldn't number the days since the gilding of the leaves in honor of autumn's envy. What a beautiful passage that made a monument of that place and time, that moment among many throughout life. That particular passage right there could easily as standalone as a brevity. But you're right. That one passage you read, you flashed me a smile that told me I was born for you. And then it makes a statement that I found very significant, that this is love, and you're its flood. That my body was your garden, and the heart I had grown in there to you was more than just flotsam. And I thank you for that. It's just that statement right there. He realizes the significance of his feelings for this other person. And much to your amusement, I knew right then I'd never be alone again. It's just a lot going on, this is a roller coaster of emotions, just beautifully done. And it's very, very typical of Ben Hart. And interestingly enough, at the top of this, I see a photograph, not his customary artwork, and I'm wondering if this is our Ben.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah, because normally he heads his pieces with some of his very, very fine artwork, but here we have a photograph of a smiling face with a very a natty hat, leaning on what looks like a very nice car, I like it. I think it's very appropriate to the piece that he's written here, which is a very fine piece. Well, thank you, Ben, for gracing my contest yet again with another fine writing. So let us continue on.
I just wanted to make a kind poet comment on this. He says, breaking this poem up into seven sections makes it easier to follow. The heart is a bold fool to tear itself apart is my favorite metaphor in this poem. Says the fine poet and called it.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, that's that is a great comment. It is, and you'll find a kind poet as you if you've not read much of Ben Hart's work, I encourage you to explore his writing, because he has, like Pam Ray, he has the gift of metaphor, and they're not obscure. They're actually word paintings and very expressive, so I would encourage you to sample some more of his work. It's well worth it. And here we have a blast from the past. Oh my God! When's the last time I saw the name Peter Solway? Good God! that crazy Australian who used to. When I was co-hosting with Neutron Bomb on Wednesday nights, and Neutron liked weird shit. I got to say, she really did. But that's her style. You know, it's just, you know, that type of stuff. So that's how we tailored the contests with some strange stuff. And Peter always wrote to the contests and typically – as much as I would beg and plead and send the man notes, he would never put the number of the prompt in his hand. And I see he's holding fast to that practice, because there's nothing in this one that mentions a prompt. But I have a feeling, having read it, that it's an overview of the art. So we're, you know, I'm going to attack here. Thinking of the Other Cheval by Peter Solway. Artist on a long-haul mission. Once upon a time, she called a postman, builder, architect, dreamer grand of ideal palace, mortar of limestone, still existent in South France, southern France. Caves of Lascaux, crypts of Notre Dame, tomb of a conquering Napoleon, boredom no more existent, dreams for the stairs to heaven, steeples beyond. An artist at home, last of the regionalists, fit as a wheelbarrow of bricks, fossils of finds, candles uncamped, on once a still standing time, Cheval, his proper name. End of poem.
Great read, Bobby. And I enjoyed
Thank
the
you.
Poem. You know, I think it captures the essence of Cheval quite wonderfully.
Yes.
You know, it speaks to the caves of LaSalle and crypts of Notre Dame, tomb of conquering Napoleon, boredom no more existent, dreams for the stairs to heaven, steeples beyond. You know, that captures Cheval quite wonderfully, in my opinion. And so I thought it was a wonderful write, and you did a fabulous read of it, Bobby.
Thank you. It, I will say, and I've not read any of Peter's work in quite some time. It's probably been well over a year. But as I recall, when he was writing for Neutron's contest, the Midnight Bomber program, his writings were very, very heavily metaphor-laced and rather cryptic. And I, to try as I might, I just could not grasp his meaning. So I was surprised to see how very direct this piece was. Still well constructed with metaphors, but almost a storyteller's version of their take on Cheval. So I was. It was very nice of him to give us when speaking of Peter Salway is a brevity. I mean, this is very brief for him. He writes very much like Ben Hart. He just kind of takes off and sails. But this was a very very nice description. It captures the spirit of Cheval's artwork. So I could see where not citing a prompt in this would be more than apropos, because he's going for the overview of the flavor and spirit and essence of Cheval's work. So nicely done, Peter, and thank you for the contribution. Good to see you again. Okay. All righty. Who got next? Oh, I'm sorry. Did I ask you for your opinion?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, very good. Okay
here we go.
Next.
We have Cleopatra, Queen of Kings by Captain Kerr.
Oh, yes, this is a good one.
Submerged
so,
in cerulean hue. Okay. Cleopatra, Queen
Sorry.
Of Kings. Submerged in cerulean hues, Cleopatra rises from crystal drops of cloudless blue, bathed by spectral rays of dusk that stir the river Nile. Her tanned skin smooths in satin folds. Warm droplets coat her flesh, perfumed in oils, sugared fruit by acolytes with cherry breath and pink vanilla smiles. In naked curves of innocence, their slender forms beguile with subtlety and human grace, rippled waters pouring forth in waves of sensuality. A columned archway gently sways in rows of pillared strength. Ornate statues sit and stare with golden horns and unclipped wings what Cleopatra has laid bare. The stonework of a pyramid angles to a peak. Hushed desire spreads throughout. Arms and neck arrayed in gold, ruled by desert heat. With long and sweeping strokes, canvases and large. In muted shades, richness flows from cavities of precious art, where a thigh might lightly show. Tempestuous as a chambered mare, sinking hoofs in sand, black-eyed cobras, searing fangs that pierce an unskilled hand. Unblemished as desert night, pumiced by the wind, a palm in an oasis, wandering banks of sin. Dual sacred cats remold from shadows and Egyptian rites. Here Cleopatra lies, mummified in aging wraps. Cleopatra, queen of kings, through Isis, may your mysteries unfold and foam.
Nicely read. Nicely read.
Thank you.
All right. And any thoughts about the story that he has told here?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty epic. I mean, she captures the spirit of Cleopatra quite wonderfully in this, right? And her details are amazing. In naked curves of innocence, their slender forms beguile with subtlety and human grace, rippled waters pouring forth in waves of sensuality. And, I mean, you know, you can just feel that stanza quite beautifully. So, and I also like the stonework of a pyramid angles to a peak. Hushed desire spreads throughout, arms and neck arrayed in gold, ruled by desert heat. I mean, the amount of gold that the Egyptians had in war is just phenomenal. And, you know, it reminds me of the King Tut, you know, tomb being opened and all the gold that was in that. And so, you know, it really is a fantastic rite, you know, captures the essence of Cleopatra quite wonderfully.
I agree. It is a very rich rite. It's a beautiful word painting. We've got some great storytelling here. Wonderfully descriptive, very tactile. Her tan skin smooths in satin folds. Warm droplets coat her flesh, perfumed in oils, sugared fruit by acolytes, with cherry breath and pink vanilla smiles. I especially like that. Excuse me, the pink vanilla smiles. Very vivid. It goes on, in naked curves of innocence, their slender forms beguiled with subtlety and human grace, rippled waters pouring forth in waves of sensuality. Excuse me. This is a very subtly sensual and erotic piece, but it plays off the imagery, excuse me, so beautifully in its storytelling. And like I said, very, very tactile, very image-rich, very well-written, nicely done. Thank you, Captain Kerr, for that wonderful offer. And I'm going to put on mute for a second because I'm about to go into a coughing fit.
Okay. And I will post the next poll in the meantime.
Okay. I didn't want to share that with the audience. That was not attractive.
Yeah.
Thank God I've got libations here. Me and my metal cup and my ice and my straw. I'd be lost. Okay, who have we got next?
So we have a pallbearer apology by Eski.
Very intriguing title. I remember reading this. It's a brevity. Let's see. We've got going on here. Yeah, pallbearer's apology. Bubble wrap on a marble headstone. Smoking blunts in a free fire zone. Hanging on the pallbearer's apology. Crippled saviors silhouetted in obtuse allegory. Suffering, watertight insight, seemingly quite opposite. The ubiquitous scam, the duplicitous sham. Tomorrow we can try again, borrow will, and cry again. Taking whatever it is we find with screwed up eyes to keep our conscience blind. and form.
Wow.
And that was based on, that was yeah, very powerful brevity. That was based on prompt 17, which is, I'm scrolling down here. I think I remember which one this is. It's, there you are. Whoops. Yes. It's called Enigma of Generations. It's interesting. It is a young woman in what looks like, it's Renaissance costume of a sort, but her hands are up gathering leaves that are falling from bare trees, and her skirt is surrounded by coppery leaves. But if you look at the front of her skirt, the front of her skirt is open, and there's an image of her peering out from the skirt, and from that image's skirt, there's another image of her peering out from the skirt, and it's almost like one of the Russian Matryoshka nested dolls that you keep seeing images as you look for, as you keep looking further and further in. Very complex art, and I really like the interpretation of it. A Pallbearer's Apology. Very intriguing title. Bubble wrap on a marble headstone, and you've got an internal rhyme here that's very clever and very intriguing. It almost reminds me of the style of Gilbert and Sullivan. A lot of melodic wordplay in here. Scam, sham, again. We find our conscience blind. Nicely done. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was fantastic, right? You know, like you said, it was an amazing take on the art itself. You know,
yes,
bubble wrap on a marble headstone, smoking blunts in a free fire zone, hanging on the pallbearer's apology, crippled saviors silhouetted in obtuse allegory, suffering, watertight. Insight seemingly quite opposite. That word threw me. I had to Google it. And so it means in relation to.
Uh-huh.
It says apt in the circumstance or in relation to something. An opposite quotation.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I learned something new, which is always wonderful. And thank you for sharing that, Eski. I appreciate it. Great write and a fabulous read, Bobby.
Thank you. And I learned something, too, because I looked up blunts. And blunts are cigars that have had the tobacco removed and replaced with marijuana. And
yeah.
not being conversant in that community, that was something new for me to learn. I knew, you know, joints and spiffs, but I'd never heard blunts before. I thought a blunt was a type of cigar, but it is, but it's a cigar after a fashion. So I learned something also. So always nice to do things like that. So yes, great, and a great brevity. I mean, very economical, right? Very powerful, I thought, with the language used. A lot of really vivid imagery. So nicely done, SD, and thank you for that terrific write. Okay, who we got next?
Queen by Apasiana.
All right, Faisy. All right, go for it.
Okay, so Paper Train by Apasiana. I leave a paper trail, literally dropping inked ideas. The train of my dress is made of words, I digress. Elegant, whimsy, with a side of scattered sorcery. My writing follows me, but I chase inspiration's next glimmer. Every entity I encounter old possibility. Faces in crowds inspire characters. Laughter lights ludicrous language. Eavesdropping is a treasure hunt. Escaping the harsh midday rays, muses haunt my periphery. End poem.
Well read. And another one of Apasiana's very compact, very economical writes. When I say economical, I mean that the author has taken great care with the choice of words, and has kept it as compact. The writing is compact and as precision as possible. It's like I once said that Laurent's writing was almost like a surgeon applying a scalpel. That's how precise some writers are. And that's why I call it an economical write. And then Aphasiana is very much like that. I leave a paper trail, literally dropping ain't ideas. The train of my dress is made of words. I digress. Elegant whimsy. And if you look at the image, it is in fact the case that the train of the character's dress is made up of pages that are just slipping off the back of her gown. And she's surrounded by what look like images from literature, and she clutches a violin to her. It's a very detailed image. So my writing follows me, but I chase inspiration's next glimmer. Every entity I encounter holds possibilities. Phases and crowds inspire characters. Laughter lights ludicrous. And her references to the characters that are surrounding her. Wonderful. She's picked up a lot of the detail in the work. So nicely, Donna Faziana. Really enjoyed that. She is a very good storyteller. What did you think of this piece, Ray?
Yeah, I thought it was fabulous. It was a pleasure to read it. It had a great flow to it. Mm-hmm. But I thought she captured the image quite beautifully.
Yes.
Muses haunt my periphery, you know, and you can see that the muses haunting her periphery in the picture. So I thought that was a great line. And, I leave a paper trail, literally dropping inked ideas from the train of my dress. The train of my dress is made of words, I digress. And you can see the train of letters pouring out behind her dress. So she really did capture the picture quite beautifully. And I liked the name of the title as well, Paper Train. So thank you for sharing, Faziana. Great job.
Yeah, the very clever title and great storytelling and great visual imagery. Yeah, thanks, Fazy. Thanks for contributing that. Really enjoyed it. She wrote when I posted the contest how much she enjoyed the artwork. And I was glad to see that she had found a piece that had inspired her. Okay, let's continue. Right. Oh, boy, we got Liquid Mind Forever now, huh? My turn?
Yeah.
I apologize for constantly having to clear my throat. I'm just having, like I said, I'm having a tough time here. These is one of the things that when I got COVID, I ended up with a very dry, unproductive cough that has just never gone away. Sometimes I sound like someone's old grandfather. Okay, we have Bull in a China Shop, and she's selected from prompt 3, which is a title, Ariadne. Sacrosanct, the virginity of the orifice, rape equals the excuse to avoid purity's chastity belt, or the lie of pristine mind, unkind to blind bumps and grind. Queen Elizabeth. Let me lead into blackest fields of fiery temptation, devastation's masturbation, ovation, please. Beauty writhes under the blade, unmade. 3, formidable fornication, prehensile utensils, stencils penciled over silk screens seemed deemed clean. The value? Control. And conquer. 4, stage 4, outrage, masquerade, all bet to disengage, staged charade, Goldilocks and shock, ad hoc defrock, gay, oh, I'm sorry, 5, gay lesbian diatribe, DNA vibe described, abomination, biblical. Genocide allied to mystify, electrified. 6, female pulchritude, rude etude, alludes to crude nude penis de Milo. Mary and Terry in the bed over whose head, matriarch or patriarch, blue boy or blue girl, ploy to justify, toy to enjoy. End poem.
That was definitely a different write for Make With Mine Forever. I mean,
yes.
It has fantastic flair to the style, and I imagine it's not an easy task to make the letters, you know, scroll across the page like that. And
yeah.
I mean, I've done it, and it's not easy for sure.
I agree.
Yeah, but I enjoyed the third stanza: formidable fornication, prehensile utensils, stencils, penciled over silkscreen seams, deemed clean, the value, control, and conquer. Wow. Stage four, outrage, masquerade, abode to disengage, stage charade, Goldilocks in shock, ad hoc, Brock. And then, the whole thing is fantastic. I mean, it's very thought-provoking and intellectual. I enjoyed the write so tremendously, and you can really feel her power in this write. And
yes,
I thought it captured the thought process of that image quite wonderfully.
Yes, the phrase is masquerade, which I thought which was very clever, because the spelling is so close. It's almost this is a wonderful, wonderfully dexterous assemblage of wordplay. She has very masterfully taken both assonance and alliteration, and has woven both throughout this. And like I agree with you, the structure of it is intriguing, because it makes for a very deliberate read. You have to pause in certain areas because of the poem itself is almost artwork in the way that she has formatted it. But the choices of words, it's so facile. So complex, like you said, the formidable fornication, prehensile utensils, stencils penciled over silk screen seems deemed clean. She's got that is a great example of assonance, because she's got the repetition of the same vowel sound, prehensile utensils, stencils penciled over silk screen seems deemed clean. She's got two different. And in the first line, same also, she got three different vowel sounds going in there. And she does it again. Masquerade, abade. And that was very nimble when she did that. Stage four, outrage, masquerade, obeyed to disengage, stage charade, Goldilocks in shock, ad hoc, defrock. Just the whole thing. I mean, this is a crafted piece because you really have there's a balance and a delicacy to the way the words are chosen and married with one another. Genocide, allied, demystified, electrified, female pulchritude, rude etude, alludes to crude nude penis. Penis de Milo. When I read that, I thought, how clever. That play on words, instead of Venus de Milo, she has his penis de Milo. I thought that was really subtle. So she's got this is a tremendous piece. I really liked where she took this prompt and just you can tell she had fun with this. I mean, this is almost like a Jackson Pollock with words. It's so well constructed. And so layered that you're right. It is a departure for her, but she's such a skilled writer that I'm not surprised that she came up with this. But I'm just delighted to see that this is what she sent us. So thank you, Liquid Mind Forever, for the tremendous piece. Okay, and I got the had the chance to read it. So who is that? Oh, we got Naomi Sarah, and it's your turn.
Okay, sounds good. I'll give this a read. This is called Pushing Forward by Naomi Sarah. As the sea of an ice world, your love froze mid-wave, curling backwards, still rippled from the wind. As I shivered under your cold stare, washing over my skin again and again, only to be met by the ache of my heart, and I struggled to place one foot in front of the other in a fight against the wintry blast. For if I stop, I will remain frozen in place. So I push forward until I reach that melting hour when the screams run free once more. And I, as a chunk of ice, break loose to sail proudly onward as a seaward ship. End poem.
Well done. Interesting. She's built this on two different prompts, and it's interesting how she's taken the two disparate prompts and has blended them beautifully into a very interesting story. As the sea of an ice world, your love froze mid-wave, curling backwards, still rippled from the wind. Just the visual imagery in that, as I shivered under you, cold stare, washing over my skin again and again, only to be met by the ache of my heart. That is just so vivid. It expresses the intensity of the emotion, and that's what she's taken away from the Cheval artwork. And it's just, again, another brevity that's really very compact, right? But great storytelling and a very powerfully emotional. What did you think?
I thought it was an exquisite write. You know, it captures the essence of being frozen in time, waiting for thaw so that you can be released to carry on. And,
right.
You know, and I, as a chunk of ice, break loose to sail proudly onward as a seaward ship. You know, we are all waiting for that ship in the night to pass by. And, you know, it seems like she has found hers, but she's frozen in that moment and unable to capture the moment. So she sails on. The detail was great, and I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Me too. Well done. Thank you, Naomi, for sending us a wonderful piece. Her writing is always very, she's a great storyteller. She just always does a very fine job. And there's always a lot of emotion in her writing. So it's always a delight to get something from her. Okay, who are we next?
So next we have the Freckled Poet, and I will post this to the group.
Oh, I think that's a new writer, isn't it?
I'm not too sure.
It doesn't. I like the nom de plume. It doesn't sound familiar. Okay, we have The Virtuoso by the Freckled Poet. I like that. Okay, The Virtuoso. There you sit on your worn leather chair, exempt from knowing how many others consider it to be your throne. From the crowd, it's evident that your connection to the music is hypnotic. Fingers lovingly explore each curve and string of your guitar. Kindly you offer others nurturance for their journey, garnished with a blinding twinkle in your eyes. And my virtuoso simply smiles with approbation. Surely God himself takes a brief moment to admire the talent he ensconces deeply within the essence of your humble bones. Admiration draws curious attention from both sexes. Men long to be you, women long to have you. Dutifully, I flash them a magisterial smile as you introduce me as your queen. Freckled poet. End of poem.
Great read, Bobby. And I like to write, you know, the virtuoso. I enjoyed the title. But there you sit in your warm leather chair, exempt from knowing how many others consider it to be your throne. I mean, yeah, you are a king in that, in your chair. From the crowd, it's evident that your connection to the music is hypnotic. Fingers lovingly explore the curved string of your guitar. You know, when somebody's magical with their instrument, you know, there's nothing like that. You know, whatever the instrument be, whether it's a bucket on the street with a couple of spoon handles as drumsticks, you know, when they're connected to that, you feel it, and you stand, you stop, and you look, and you listen, and you feel that art as it's taking place, the connection that they have. Like I said, whether it's a bucket on the street with two spoons for drumsticks, but the love is there, and you can feel it. I mean, I've seen homeless people capture my attention with that, you know, like I said, two spoons in a bucket, and it's just amazing. That people have sometimes with their instrument and the beauty that that can emote. So I thought it was wonderful, right? And captured the artist quite beautifully.
It does. I just wish that I'd opened it earlier in the day to pre-writes, and unfortunately, sometimes when folks insert pre-writes, they don't share with us which image, which prompt they're referencing in their pre-write. And so, unfortunately, you lose a little bit of the interpretation. It's because this is a pre-write from a previous contest where it says, quote 6, music is a language that doesn't speak in particular words. It speaks in emotions, and it's in the bones, which is, I'm sure, the way it is written definitely speaks to the prompt. I just wish she had shared with us which piece of artwork she was admiring and what inspired this. It loses something a little bit for me when they do that, especially since the point of the whole contest is ekphrasis. So, but I thank her for sharing this with us as a great piece of work. And Freckled Poet. I like the name. And if she wants to plug in the, I may send her a little note and say, please, let us know which prompt inspired you to share this piece with us. Because that way I think we get a little bit more from the reading. But that's just my take on things. And being the precision and retentive engineer I am, that's how it comes out. So anyway, but thank you for that. And like I said, I think that's a new contributor. So that's always nice to see. Okay, we have coming up next what? Oh, me? are we referencing me? Okay,
we got.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Alrighty, let me open this up. The timing is exquisite. This was for a contest a couple of years ago by Poetess Luna and Timidus Rex. It was Adobe of Weary Muses, and it was all Michael Cheval's work and for the Rhythm and Rhyme show. So. And Pam had reminded me that I had submitted a write to this contest and had the great good fortune to get a silver out of it. So I was pleasantly surprised. But the piece I selected, the title of it is The 12th Caprice of Casanova. And that's what Cheval entitled the artwork here. So I stayed with that title and wrote around that. And so, and it's at the top of the piece. And so here we go. Of intrigue and conquest, Casanova well knew, but of true love's entanglements, he hadn't a clue. His romps to new paramours changed from hour to hour like the labors of a bee flitting from flower to flower. His heart an empty reservoir, impossible to fill. To him, love was merely passion, just a craft and a skill. So in most lavish costume to the mask he did go, just to shatter more hearts with his elegant show. As he glanced round the ballroom in search of fresh prey, he'd unwittingly stumbled into love's trap that day. The dazzling creature who captured his eye was not to succumb with an amorous sigh. No delicate damsel with heaving ivory breast, she was the very first woman who had dared denied his quest. Beyond comprehension, Casanova stood aghast. This was not how his forays had evolved in the past. Of delicate plotting, she was more than a master, and Casanova's wretched heart was bent for disaster. Like an experienced angler, this lass set the hook, as over a slow flame his psyche she did cook. At the end of the evening, though his fires were lighted, Casanova knew firsthand of lust unrequited. This raven-haired vixen, not a candidate for seduction, led to Casanova's downfall and his ego's destruction. Dalliances without number, one with promises of heaven and of serious caprices, there'd been scarcely 11. No more the old Casanova, the predator of the past. This caprice proved his undoing. His 12th would be his last. End poem.
Wow, fantastic read. And that's an epic write, Bobby. I really like the way you heard the essence of this woman and her play on Casanova and his play on her. Beyond comprehension, Casanova stood aghast. This was not how its forays had evolved in the past. Delicate plotting, she was more than a master, and Casanova's wretched heart was bent for disaster. I liked it. I really enjoyed the whole poem. No more the old Casanova, the predator of the past. This Capri proved his undoing. His fault would be his last. Beautifully written. Fabulous read as well. And would you like to say anything about your poem?
It was one of those things that when I started writing, it started rhyming itself, so I got out of its way. They took the image and the title and tried to build the story around the 12th caprice of Casanova and Casanova's reputation preceding him and how he was a sexual predator or a romantic predator, how he would just play with affections, and it was just all his gamesmanship. But here he's met someone who is more than his equal and has subjected him as one of my friends, she got a bit of her own back for females who had fallen prey to his charms. She had realized that she basically spent the evening skull fucking him, and what do you think he could do about it?
And
I've been in that position, and. You know, the look of shock on the man's face when you tell them what basically you've been playing with their head and they must like it because they keep coming back for more. It's tongue surprise. It's like, oh, shoot. You know, because here's someone who thinks that they're on top of their game and all of a sudden they've had the rug pulled out from under them. So it was a fun ride. And I tried very hard to tell an amusing and interesting story, and it actually turned out pretty well. So I was glad. I was very and they're pleasantly surprised by the silver. So anyway, it was fun, right? What did you think? Oh, you told me. You liked it. So anyway, and Pam, thank you, Pam, for reminding me about it. So that's why I tossed it in. And I also contacted Poeta Picasso because there was an image in the contest that was a flame flamenco, and I asked him if he had something, because you know how prolific Frank is, and I was certain with his writing that there was something that he could find that would apply to that image. And he did not disappoint. So we have a piece from Poeta Picasso. And we also have, and I don't know if I have it, I need to look on the board, Stellina was running a little bit tardy on her contribution. So who we got next? Poeta Picasso?
Yes, we have Frank next.
Okay, all right. Well, while you're doing that, while you're pulling that up, I'm going to go retrieve Stellina's piece and plug that into the board. So.
Okay, okay. So we have Seductive Flamenco by Poeta Picasso, an exotic and steamy night of the tapping and clapping of a sexy ballerina eats up the night with the swirling layers of ruffles on her dress as she dances passionately with the castanets to the sensual movement of her gyrating hips. Olé. The sweet scent of the beautiful jasmine exudes her erotic seduction so naturally with the tempo of the dulcet tones of the strings of a flamenco guitar, igniting the spell of her sultry dance. Her Spanish eyes, olive skin, divine contours, ruby lips, and dark hair mesmerized me gradually with a tempting look, wet my appetite of carnal pleasures and the midnight oil of a moonlight tryst. Her powerful dance and the impassioned guitar arouse the nocturnal beast from within me, and the combustion of the eager bull under the silk blanket with the sounds of a seductive flamenco. The matador is awakened. Olé, olé, olé. And poem.
Nicely done. Well read. Well read. And so, I don't want to use the word typical. This is Frank written all over it. It is just his incomparable style of sensuality, the description of the dress, the dance, the movements, the sound. He writes a very tactile piece. He always does. You get involved with sounds and scents and flavors and textures. I mean, the sweet scent of the beautiful jasmine exudes her erotic seduction so naturally with the tempo of the dulcet tones of the strings of a flamenco guitar, igniting the spell of her sultry dance. I mean, right there, that is an exquisite word picture. And then he talks about her Spanish eyes, olive skin, defined contours, ruby lips and dark hair mesmerize me. And he's painted a word picture here with such exquisite detail. The midnight oil of a moonlight tryst. Beautifully done. Just wonderful. Word painting. Thank you, Frank, for going through your library and picking one that is actually quite in keeping with the image here. And interestingly enough, I've inserted Stellina's work on the board, and it is to the same image. So let's have a little comparison here. Let's see what Stellina has to say about this flaming flamenco piece by Michael Chaval. And
sure.
I
just wanted to speak on.
Yes, please.
I just wanted to speak on Frank's poem.
Yes.
You know, I could hear him reading it as I read it, and it was just fantastic. I mean, you know, you can feel the heat in it and the steaminess of it rising up as you read through it. Her Spanish eyes, all its skin, defined contours, ruby lips and dark hair, mesmerized me gradually with a tempting look to whet my appetite of carnal desires and the midnight oil of a moonlight tryst. Woohoo! Steamy stuff. And it was a pleasure to read that for you, Frank, so thank you for sharing. All right, I'm going to post Stelina's up.
Okay.
And this is called by Stelina.
Yep, and my turn. Okay, I get to channel Stelina. Carmen. He watches her. Carmen, gypsy maiden, every man's desire, beguiling curves and ebony eyes that sparkle fire. More dangerous to a man than the raging bull. One glance your way and your hungry heart is full. Flamenco flame, primed to dance. All who behold her are entranced by her fluid fascination, inflaming blood with anticipation. Movements so labyrinthine, intoxicating like a heady wine. Diaphanous skirts reveal lithesome forms, writhing like asps as she wantonly performs. Raven-winged locks cascade over skin, redolent with the scent of sweet jasmine. Seductive glances from chatoyant eyes, voice unveiled, promises of paradise. Her evocative elixir, ambrosia to savor, for those to whom she prefers her favor, a flash of limbs, a flick of fan. She sets her sights upon the man who flames of passion will ignite as he succumbs in the pale moonlight. End poem.
Well, that was a fabulous read, Bobby. And what an excellent write, you know. You can feel the passion and the desire burning up in this woman. And, you know, she's more dangerous to a man than a raging bull, you know, because she can take him out where the bull will just kill him. one glance away and your hungry heart is full. Flamenco flame, primed to dance. All who behold her are entranced by her fluid fascination. Inflaming blood with anticipation, movements so labyrinthine, intoxicating like a heady wine. Diaphanous skirts reveal lissome forms, writhing like asps as she wantonly performs. Like, just woohoo. Beautiful, right? Amazing imagery as well.
Yes.
So thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing, Stelina. And you did a great job of reading it, Bobby.
Thank you. This is interesting that we've just seen a different piece for the same image, and it's both very seductive pieces. The styles are so different. Still, a wonderful visual imagery, very seductive, very subtly seductive, subtly erotic. Both of them. What I find interesting is the way the different writers use their use of language. And I know Stelina, I identify with her because she, like I, is a wordsmith. And she is very precise in her choice. And I find it interesting that some of the words she uses, like labyrinthian, but here's one that I'm sure that no one is familiar with except me. Seductive glances from chatoyant eyes, unveiled prominence of paradise. Now, chatoyancy, see, I work with minerals. I like natural stones. Chatoyancy is when you look at a tiger eye or a star sapphire, that band of light. And that's why they're usually cut in a cabochon which is the curved, the domed, polished cut that the lapidists will do. The band of light that you see in a tiger eye, that's called chatoyancy. And so when I saw her, yeah, it's chatoyant eyes, is a band of light coming from her eyes. I thought, what a clever way to use that word. When I work with minerals and things like that, I tend to try and learn as much as I can about their physical qualities, like inclusions, like most people don't realize that emeralds are made of beryl, and by nature are always going to have inclusions. But the chatoyancy has always fascinated me, and to see it used in her work, I thought was quite artful. She's got her evocative elixir, ambrosia, to savor for those to whom she prefers her favor. A flash of limbs, a flick of fan, she sets her sights upon the man who flames of passion will ignite. I mean, just, and the great storytelling, wonderful word painting here. Again, like you, more dangerous to a man than the raging bull. Could be anything more descriptive? I mean, it gives you a sense of her power. In the dance, one glance your way and your hungry heart is full. A flamenco flame primed to dance. All who behold her are entranced by her fluid fascination. Great piece. Wonderful use of vocabulary, a very melodic rhyming pattern, which she does with such great skill, and tells us a story of a seductive wanton who captivates whomever she chooses, just by the power of her beauty and her personality and her dance. So great piece, Delina. Thank you. I loved setting it next to Frank's and looking at the two of them together. You have two different pieces of poetry applied to the same image, and yet how different the styles. And I find it marvelous, the variety and the way people construct the works and how they see things. So anyway, we run out of pieces? I'm afraid to ask. we still got 40 minutes of show to do. Is it time to bring out the balloon animals?
Oh yeah. Gosh.
Well, here we go. I'm going to do fiddlesticks. I'm going to do what Pam suggested, and I'm going to go to the previous contest that was. I'm trying to look for the date on this. It's been forever and a day, but this was by Poetess Luna and Intimidus Rex. It was a piece that I had mine in, which I think was 2021. So I remember reading almost all of these. There's some great pieces in here. They're all applied to Michael Cheval's work. And so let me quickly grab. Let's start with the gold winner. Why not? Let me grab that, and I will go ahead and post it on the board. Maybe. Oh, here we go. There we go. And by Colop. I haven't seen anything from Colop in a while.
No, I haven't seen her around in a long time.
No. And it's nice to go back to these old contests and resurrect some of these pieces because they're as delightful now as they were then. So here we go. This is called Incantation of an Orange Dream. It's like I said, this is all being inspired by Michael Cheval's artwork. And while you're reading, I'm going to go plunging into the rest of the contest and bring up some more pieces that we can read for this evening.
Okay. We have Incantation of an Orange Dream by Colab. Sorry, I'm just going to check the screen. Okay. Incantation of an Orange Dream by Colab. Pumping air into the pleated lungs of the musician's accordion, he exhales notes extraordinaire in a pose of meditation. The whining chords of onric despair float and flutter towards an orange dimension where sirens hold the cherished light. Mini moons that sharpen sight, enlightening the way, where quiescence lays along sandy shores of ripples and waves that lap and retreat to the tropical beat of trees in fronded cloaks swaying to trade winds, where the mind flutters under arcs, arcades, and vaults to reach its final destination, the petaled shape, all-knowing eye, a rose's lucidity, the meaning of everything is nigh. End poem.
Nicely read.
Thank you.
It has a nice rhythm to it. And interesting the way she's structured it. Just the two lines, pumping air into the pleated lungs of the musician's accordion. I love that description, pleated lungs. And he exhales notes of extraordinaire in a pose of meditation. It's interesting that just the first two lines, it is so beautiful. What a wonderful metaphor, pleated lungs of an accordion. And then it goes on to describe the surroundings, the waves that lap and retreat to the tropical beat of trees when fronded cloaks swaying the trade winds where the mind flutters. Great visual imagery, very serene, very peaceful poem. It's just, you feel surrounded by music and warmth and a tropical environment, and it's very peaceful. What did you think?
You know, her talent shines through this throughout the write intensely. You know, I found it inspirational. Her word choices and her metaphors are really rich and divine. So many moons that sharpen sight, enlightening the way, where quiescence lays along sandy shores of ripples. I mean, that's just beautiful. Such a talented writer she is, and I miss her a lot. So good to see you again, Colab.
Yeah, it's nice to have that chance to reflect back on her pieces. I always enjoy her writing. So I'm plugging a few more in here. Look at that. Oh, Naomi Sarah. She gave us another piece. Bless your heart, dear. Oh. Okay, what do we got here? We got Naomi Sarah. Oh, wonderful. And it's written to one of the pieces in the contest. Can you grab that up and stick it in the board there, please?
Sure.
I've got it. You know what? I'm right here. I've got it. I don't know why I'm sending you on an errand that I can already take. I can do this. Here we go. My hands never left my wrists. There we go. Okay, there we go. I Dream of You by Naomi Sarah. I will go ahead and tackle this.
Sure.
I dream of you in the rainy season. Your name wiggles on my tongue, a fish in a cove. dream of you in the heart of the forest, inextricable, lost. For you I will weave a nest braided of leaves and jay, waiting for you like the dew, lamped in the belly of the springs. I hear the drum of your feet beating a newborn dance. The earth is round under my breasts, or your heart thumps in full. I dream of you, the sailor of my belly, across the unknown seas and the sea caves, waiting for the hour of the tides, for your cry, which makes all capsize. End poem.
Wow, beautiful read. And that's such a touching write. You know, it really captures the essence of motherhood quite beautifully. You know, I dream of you in the hearts of the forest, inextricable, lost. For you, I will weave a nest braided of leaves and jay, waiting for you like the dew, lamped in the belly of springs. I hear the drum of your feet beating a newborn dance. The earth is round under my breast where your heart thumps in full. I mean, it's such a wonderful poem on the subject of motherhood.
It is. It is. And it's subtle. I'm glad that you, because I see other features of that that you could interpret a different way. But I agree. When you look at it in that light, I dream of you in the rainy season. Your name wiggles on my tongue, a fish in a cove. The visual imagery in this and the metaphors, beautifully done. Very subtle rites. I hear the drum of your feet beating a newborn dance. There you got it. You picked up on that beautifully. I did not. The earth is round under my breasts where your heart thumps in full. You really grabbed this much better than I did. The fact that it is talking about motherhood. I dream of you, the sailor of my belly across unknown seas. Boy, I'm glad, you know, I really appreciate your comments on this because you saw what I didn't. And the fact that you're sharing what you saw helped me appreciate this marvelous piece all the more. So thank you for your insight into this piece that, like you said, is a wonderful testimony to motherhood and very romantic. It is a love letter to an unborn child.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, how beautiful is that? So my goodness. Okay, well, let's see. What else have I tacked in there? Let's see. I threw another couple on the board.
We have the Harp by Arendt.
Arendt, yeah. And
I will give that to you.
Okay.
Lacquered black, shiny as could be, centered in the middle, seemingly absorbing and reflecting all the light in the shop. Other harps, mostly white ones, spiraled around it. I hesitated for a moment. A navy blue, the electric harp, was quite seductive. But no, the luster and simple elegance was too captivating. My mother, who was quite unabashedly, vicariously living through me, fulfilling her musical dreams, chose me the instrument. I was to learn the harp. She had rented a creamy white harp for me to start with, but now it was getting more serious. I had been playing for a year and had not rebelled, so it was time for me to choose my partner. I went straight to it. No ornaments, just a black shine that captured the eye as I sat and embraced it. Each string told me I had chosen well, until a high note grizzled. The vendor immediately told my mother that this one had a flaw, urging me to try another pearly twin, but it was too late. Now, for some reason,
probably having to do with a flaw in my own soul, it was the one I would call mine. The snagging chord had produced a sound that was its own music that could not be replicated. My mother quickly realized I was having a moment and would not be dissuaded. When it arrived a week later, I cradled it with my whole body, laying my head on it as I played. Green Sleeves rang as it had never rung before. The intimacy of the vibrations resonating through my core, and then the final arpeggio ended with the heavenly, slightly discordant twang of my soul. End poem.
Nicely done. This is a really a delightful piece that talks about how a musician cleaves to their instrument, how it becomes they become united with it. It becomes an extension of them and their personality, and it's beautifully really expressive. You can feel the emotion of how the musician is drawn to a certain piece. I was to learn the harp. She had rented a creamy white harp for me to start with, but now it was getting serious. And she identifies. It's like a piece of music or a piece of writing speaks to the reader. This harp spoke to her. And I like when it arrived a week later, I cradled it with my whole body, laying my head on it as I played. Green Sleeves rang as it had never rung before, the intimacy of the vibrations resonating through my core. Just beautifully expressed on how emotional and how personal music can be to the musician, to the artist. What did you think?
Yeah, this is what I was saying about some things just resonate with the artists. I mean, you know,
yes.
Like whether it's a bucket and two spoons,
yes.
The beauty that connects between the instrument and the artist is just astounding. And, you know, like I said, I saw a video of a guy playing on an empty bucket with spoons, and I was just baffled at the art that this man had coming out of him with this, you know, simple set of tools that he had in front of him.
Yeah.
And the beauty that was woven throughout that performance was intense and incredible to behold. So I thought it was just a wonderful right, and I thought she captured the connection between the artist and the instrument in a stellar and unique way. So thank you for sharing, Arendt.
Yeah, and what you have spoken of, have you ever heard of the musical group Stomp?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what they do. They use non-musical instruments, brooms, matchboxes, garbage cans, Zippo lighters, their feet, and it's all done the rhythm and a beat, and it's music, because as far as I'm concerned, music is organized sound. As a matter of fact, I was watching a YouTube video last night about tango, and they were showing different tango scenes from different films, and I have to look up this one. It was about men in prison, and they were trying to express their individuality, and these two prisoners started doing a tango together, and at first the people around them, the men around them, thought they were a little bit crazy. But then they started making noise. They started making a rhythm to what they were doing. And pretty soon, the entire room, and there was no music. It was just all drumming on tables and clapping. And they created their own music just from the sound they were making. So, yes, You know, you made a very, very valid point there, and I agree with you completely. So, and I posted up a piece called The Symphony of Moonlight by Sticky Heart, or somebody else I haven't read in a while. I'll go ahead and take this. Encoiled and folding darkness of chaste moonlight, with worms asleep burrowed in earthen beds. Here in the sky, circadian crevasse of night, the guile and marvel of flowers starts to bloom. Oh, they seem quiet by daylight, but their juju incarnation of ancient sorcery. Yes, these petal charmers are witches all, writhing and mocking these charmed voices, chatter of seed and nectar wild. For at night, the quiet moon flowers bloom incarnate alive, blessed and bodied supple. The rebirth of moon gives enchanted blooms the gift of fingers, of face and lips. So shy, hushed, and revenant, they forge their instruments. In leaf and curling vine, the flushed rose finds a harp. Her delicate stems cross demure and petaled ankles and tiny pistil and pollen pluck pure the green harp strings, ringing soprano strange melodies of seed and season. Her soft fingers make the music of dainty dewdrops, of restless meadows, and of foolish bees busy and frazzled, of unruffled thick boughs of shade so clean and certain of the soothing storms of liquid cool blue moon days. Songs of the flower fay calls forth the feathered owl. Sweet gray moths fly giddy, winged in white light of the ballad, and even the wolf of the nightwood perks his ears to listen to the muffled moonlight orchestra, the flowers' nightly symphony. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And that's such a beautiful poem. I mean, you can picture this as you read through it. The coil and folding darkness of the chaste moonlight, with worms asleep burrowed in earthen beds, here in the sly circadian crevice of night, the guile and marvel of flowers start to bloom. Oh, they seem quiet by daylight, but their juju, incantation of ancient sorcery. Yes, these petal charmers are witches all, ribbing and mocking these chime voices chatter of seed and nectar wild. And, you know, you can just picture all that as you read through it. And then for at night, the quiet moonflowers bloom, incarnate, alive, blessed, embodied, supple. The rebirth of the moon gives enchanted blooms the gift of fingers, of face and lips. So shy, hushed, and reverent, they forge their instruments. And then I really like the image of the vine being plucked as a harp.
Yes.
You know, you can see all that as you read through it. It's just brilliant. Fantastic, right? And excellent imagery throughout. But, you know, it was very enchanting, visceral, and engaging. So thank you for sharing that, Sticky Heart.
I agree. It painted a picture for me that was almost reminiscent of one of the songs that Moody Blues does in the album Every Good Boy Deserves Favor, because it talks about the garden, the animals playing the flowers and doing their own symphony from the flowers and the garden. And it was reminiscent to me of that particular song. But it does, the visual imagery and the place it at night gives it a mystic quality. While we sleep, this very quiet concert is going on around us, and it's only privy to those things that are alert at night. that can appreciate it. So you're right, beautifully done. And I've put another one out there, if you would tackle it. It's called Vagary by Sapphire Rose.
Okay, I'll grab that and post it to the group. Oh, you got it in there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we have Vagary by Sapphire Rose. Her eyes, so full of bewilderment, but I doubt she is bemused. Sedentary between degrees, hearts and minds in play, with Casanova streak emitting shadows intensely peak. Don't she see the outstretched hand, the one daring to claim the lens? Hair of raven against skin, of fleshy hue. Note, she's the girl you will cater to. Too many walk this road, where shadowed innocence filters the dark from the light, replacing it with shades of beggary. Greens unseen and unspoken of, step into her fantasy, take a seat and crushed red wings. Let me spin a tale of a mistress who weaves unknowns into magical realms, diving into the depths of peculiarity. Let me spark an ember, burning away that false disguise she hides behind. Allow me to be that unknown beat rising up in the center of your core, or that exhaled breath upon your lips. Ignore the casting shadows behind her, for they are only there to color the skyscape. They are her muse, thinking they could be more, now part of her archives, perfectly placed on the other side, strumming heartstrings with sticky fingers. They are her puppets on a string. They fear the shackles of beggary, so they obey their mistress, mocking those in peripheral view for all of Venice to see. End poem.
Nicely read. Nicely read. What did you think of it?
I thought it was excellent. You know, I like her. She's the female Casanova in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, perfectly placed on the other side, strumming heartstrings with sticky fingers. They are her puppets on a string. They fear the shackles of beggary, so they obey their mistress, mocking those in peripheral view for all of Venice to see. Yeah, it's a talented write for sure. It was a pleasure to read it as well.
And it's interesting because it was the same image that I wrote my piece to, and she came about with a similar story, but told from a different point of view. It is the as like you said, she is the sexual predator in this. Let me spin a tale of a mistress who weaves unknowns into magical realms, diving into the depths of peculiarity. Let me spark an ember, burning away that false disguise she hides behind. Giving the same painting of as Casanova, only from a female point of view. Allow me to be that unknown beat string up in the center of your core, or that exhaled breath upon your lips. And like you said, as she plucks the strings with sticky fingers, heartstrings, they are her puppets on a string. They fear the shackles of vagary, so they obey their mistress. Nicely done. I mean, she's really the character development in this. You can see how this particular character is just as skilled as her male counterpart. So the tale is told very nicely. So thank you for the great read. I've gone ahead and plugged another one in there. And I've got Lady Ambrosia with Honey Dipped Violin. Let me clean up some of the... It's like I've got this parade of tabs open. Okay, here we go. And this is by Ivy Rose, from someone else's whose work I haven't seen in a while. Thank you. And another country he's heard from. Sorry. He just woke up and wanted to let me know. Lady Ambrosia with honey-dipped violin. Sweet Lady Ambrosia of circled honeycomb scoops with honey-spun bodice of brown and gold striping raises her hip as she plays on a honey-dipped violin. In flames with staccato notes, the syrup drips, notes of innocence and purity rise on musical wings. Tuberose blossoms of white grow and bloom in buttered notes of heart-pounding richness, warm the heart pulse of bee wine intoxication. Glaze mainly perfumes as the bow strokes. Honeydew strings with aromatic aromas that rise her coquettish winks made men swoon and hope. Dance close to the mixture of white blossoms. In heather lawns of her honeycomb stages, played swayed closer to her honeycomb skirts with saccharine highs, aged and growing to form honeycomb chambers of compote. Not to keep stringing along any of Lady Ambrosia's ardent suitors made them eager for pursuit of her maidenly charms. With a fever, only her honeybee marmalade would satisfy and soothe them. End poem.
Well, fantastic read. And I enjoyed it. You know, it's kind of exotic, you know, this woman who is... You know, she's just awe-inspiring, you know. It's in buttered notes of heart-pounding richness, warm the heart pulse of bee wine intoxication, glaze, maidenly perfumes as the bow strokes, honeydew strings with aromatic aromas that rise, her coquettish winks make men swoon and hope dance close to the nectar of white blossoms. Just a beautiful poem. Excellent imagery as well throughout. So
it is.
I enjoyed your comment. You said,
"Thank you." I like.
Damn you!
Definitely.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
No, sorry. Hello? I was just reading your comment to her.
Oh! Yeah. I did comment on it. Damn you! You've done it. Yeah, it is. It's a very rich, tactile piece. The references to buttered notes, I like that, of heart-pounding richness, the bee wine intoxication, honeycomb skirts. There's a flavor, a honeyed flavor, a sweetness pervasive throughout the piece, and she's threaded it through all of the verses, honeydew strings with aromatic aromas that rise coquettish winks made men swoon and hope dance close to the mixture of white blossoms. Beautiful visual imagery, a theme through the entire piece that she stays consistent with the richness, the viscosity of the music, of the honey, her environment. Very descriptive. I don't know. You can feel the texture. You can almost taste the words, which I really enjoyed. And Naomi Serva, bless her pea-picking little heart, has generated yet another piece for the contest and has plugged it in. And so I'm going to take this one, if you don't mind, because we're getting on close. So we're almost done. So I'm going to take, again, with this parade of tabs open. Here we go. The end. We sit kneecap deep in silence. The faucets drip, drip, drip reverberating around the room, yet neither of us moves to stop it. Outside, there's no traffic. no bird song. And we sit there as fall leaves under frost, the air so brittle it could snap. If it doesn't, I could. If it doesn't, I could. It's midsummer, but I feel the chill, the coldness. This is my winter, the anger, pain, sadness, all intermingled into those moments when our words stopped, into the moment when my heart broke. Yet it was a good breaking, leading to healing, to new ways onwards. Sometimes loss says more. End poem. Wow.
Beautiful read. And, you know, this is a very emotional, right? You know,
you
can feel the emptiness in it, you know, the, it was, it tugged on the heartstrings, you know, to new ways onward. Sometimes loss says more, you know, I thought that really captured the essence of the rite quite beautifully. But we sit knee deep in silence, the faucets drip, 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 reverberating around the room, yet neither of us moves to stop it. Outside, there is no traffic, no bird song, and we sit here as fall leaves under frost. Air so brittle it could snap. If it doesn't, I could. It's midsummer, but I feel the chill. Well, I'm almost reading the whole thing again. But, you know, it's a powerful rite, you know, and it's hard-hitting. It's got incredible imagery through it as well. So great job, Naomi. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, really. I like one thing I've noticed about Naomi Sarah's work is she's very colloquial, very, very straightforward, almost conversational in the way she approaches pieces. I've managed to close it. Let me open it back up because I wanted to quote the opening. We sit knee deep in silence. The faucets drip, 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 reverberating around the room. Yet neither of us moves to stop it. I mean, how vivid is that? I mean, the picture that it creates in your mind is just. So it's almost palpable because we've all been in that situation where there's the 500-pound gorilla. No one wants to speak, and that there's something in our environment that's making noise, that's breaking the silence. And outside there's no traffic, no birdsong, and we sit there as fall leaves under frost. That's silence. I mean, you think about it, so the fall leaves under the frost. So, well done. Nice. I'm glad she shared that with us. And we're down to 2 minutes. We survived another Saturday. I'm hearing mysterious noises from my kitchen, which I don't like because the cat's right here. Oh, well. Anyway, thank you, Gray. Thank you, Pam, for the suggestion of contributing from the other contest because we had more work inspired by Michael Cheval. And I'm still going to go ahead and run with the other half of his absurdity collection because there's always something out there that someone's going to see that is going to speak to them. So I'll go ahead. And I think part of the problem this time was I wasn't feeling good, and so I didn't give writers enough time to play around with the prompts. So I'll get this other one. I've almost got it finished. I'll get it out on the air tomorrow so people have plenty of time to play around with it. So I don't like to give people, short notice, like 5 days. To me, I think this isn't enough. I like to give people at least 7 days. So anyway, my bad, not wanting to be wanting to assign blame, I simply will fix the problem. And with that, it is midnight, and it is also now officially October. Oh, my God, we're there. And so when we go into the October contest after this next Michael Cheval is going to be right around Halloween, And I guarantee goddamn to you, I'm going to find some weird shit to for people to write about. So look forward to it.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, thank you. Good night. And enjoy the rest of your weekend. Always glad
thank
to
you,
have
Bobby.
Your help.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye now.
Good night. Bye.